seven lengths at the second call. Now, these are designations that, with all due respect to the subjective handicappers, we can duplicate that they can't see. That's very important in determining who will actually be the early horse in a race, not the horse that looks like it's going to be early because it went wire to wire. Now we come to the most important factor if you want to win at the races, and that is having corollaries. What is a corollary? It is one of more factors which substantiate a prime factor. You have many methodologies and many procedures, speed ratings and buyer ratings and Ragusan ratings and anybody else's ratings, which give you one readout, one final answer as to who's going to win the race. No corollary, nothing to support it, just that one number. Call any one of a dozen or several dozen, 900 numbers. Buy those little things they give out at the track for a couple of bucks, or whatever they charge for them now. And they will give you some winners without telling you how they got them. The chief obstacle between picking winners and a successful trip to the teller's window, this means making money from your handicapping, is finding a set of corollaries that substantiate and verify your ability to make a wagering decision. Finding correct corollaries, viable corollaries, on which you can depend is based on compounded ratings. Not just the velocity of a horse by fraction, not just the velocity of a horse by final time, or any increment therein, but by compounding the various ratings into something that doesn't really exist. And here's a little something that kind of disturbed me when it came out not too long ago in an article in American Turf Monthly. Here's a fellow who found the answer by reading our material. His name is Bob Pandolfo, a writer for American Turf Monthly. The headline of the article was Compounded Ratings at Work. And he analyzes speed ratings, which are velocity ratings by fraction and final time, versus compounded ratings. With the acknowledgement that some figures, meaning the individual figures, don't tell the whole story. Here's what he went on to say, how he started his article. He's talking about incremental velocity, which intrigued, he says, a PhD by the name of Dr. Howard Sarton. Sarton got involved with handicapping almost accidentally. As a psychologist, he was given the task of helping addicted horse players stop their losing habits. He decided the best way to do this was to turn them into winning horse players. I hate that term, horse player, because horse players play. And he goes on, he says, he developed a feet per second formula, also known as velocity ratings, which has come to be known as the Sarton methodology. Now here's the key phrase. Not only did the Sarton methodology break each horse's performance down to feet per second intervals, it also produced the first compounded ratings. Now that is the secret to success. Nothing wrong with being able to diagnose how a horse will run its first fraction, its second fraction, third fraction, and make a graph which designates its position at those three intervals, but it is not the whole story. Compounded ratings are the story. We've always had compounded ratings. From the very beginning, when I first did a computer program, or even when we tried to do it by a handheld calculator, we found out that fractional ratings were viable. We could win more than the average horse player. They did not produce the same results as did compounded ratings. In Tom Brohammer's Modern Pace Handicapping, he goes into this. The viability of compounded ratings over just fractional ratings. He used early pace, sustained pace, and factor W and factor X in that book. We compounded only early and late into total in the lesser book, Pace Makes the Race, which was meant for people who didn't want to lose as much or just break even. It was not a very serious work. At any rate, those compounded ratings were great at that time because they pointed to very obvious factors. years, which you could combine and average. But as we said before, as this was proliferated more and more, the mutuals started going down. So we had to make more finite compoundings, which we have done now. Now in this manual that comes with this tape, you have the Sartan Methodology Today workbook, in which we go through a variety of programs that we've produced over the years, which are pretty well self-explained in this manual. We go from synergetic mashup, thermation, entropy, quadrator, right up to the point where we are today, which is Pace Launcher. If you're still using or want those other programs, nothing I can do to discourage you, I suppose, but let me tell you what the Pace Launcher series was developed for. Developed to solve the problem, and it's here on page 42, and answers the questions posed by users of other programs since 1982. Hidden within the algorithms that produce the readouts of Pace Launcher is virtually everything viable in all those other programs. The only thing it doesn't have is Thermation's animated stop-action screens where the horse moves across the screen, which dazzles a lot of people. The program goes far beyond the limitations of Phase 1, Phase 3, and their derivatives, UltraScan and Synergism. The power of K-Gen entropy and fractals is incorporated into Pace Launcher. The readouts have been made so simple and so easy to comprehend that most users cannot discern where K-Gen entropy or fractals come into play. And that's by design. Sometimes these bigger words, these more esoteric phrases, astounded people, and they couldn't get past the fact that the words were unfamiliar, so they didn't use them properly. These are esoteric, and they don't really need any explanation. They're there. It's like you go to the ocean. Someone says, there's an ocean. Well, you remember that's an ocean. You don't have to ask what the salt content is or all any other factors. It's an ocean. Pace Launcher, in other words, embodies everything that we ever had before and improves upon it. On the subject of compounded ratings, let me remind you of something that the Germans call Gestalt. Gestalt meaning the whole. The whole is greater or less than the sum of its parts. You've all heard the phrase that the whole is not the sum of its parts. Well, that is especially applicable to compounded rating. Now let's look at the prime compounded rate. Let's look at a matchup just from a fractional standpoint. Race starts here. First fraction, second fraction, and third fraction are denoted. Here's where the horse is at the first fraction. This horse, number one, is number one at the first fraction. It goes way down here, and then it comes up, makes a V move, comes back up in the third fraction. That's horse number one. Horse number one is ultimately eliminated from our handicap. Now horses, if you were to look at this graph, this horse number three, Mr. F, he continues to rise, and you would say that's going to be the winner of this race because look at, he goes right up from his first fraction deficiency to peaking at the second fraction and goes on to win. Well, he did. He placed. The horse that won the race was seven, who started way down here, came up here with a big second fraction move, and then had less of a third fraction. Looking at just this alone, what it did by fraction makes it rather difficult to analyze the race. But now let's move down to the compounded ratings. Let's take a look at our horse, Mister. Incidentally, you can enter as many lines as you wish into this program and take the best. We entered Mr. Frisky off of the second line. It was second best early, fourth best late. Its composite rating, it was number one. On the turn, the second fraction, it was number three. In its hidden energy, the compounding of second and final fraction. And factor W, a compounding of early and late, it was number one. And it ranked number one overall, which is a good reason why we play more than one horse. The other horse, Job, had the best slate pace rating, third best composite rating, the best second fraction, the best hidden energy. Didn't do too well in factor W because it was overwhelmingly late. Third best, and the nice thing about it, even though it's third ranked, you pay $26.60 or 80 cents. So that's the difference between compounded ratings to find a value horse, and Mr. F incidentally paid $4.80 to place. So instead of betting Mr. F and getting a place price, if you bet it to place, you end up with a winner. That's one of the powers of compounded ratings. Now let's turn to page T. Instead of using numbers, we designated by the alphabet in this ancillary workbook, the supplemental workbook. Turn to page T and you'll see the heading Prime Corollaries. Now the prime corollaries are the ones that ultimately are the most important. They are, incidentally, there's a line here that is not a corollary so much as it's under N, look under N, after the horse's name and line number. That is its designation, how it needs to lead. Whether it's three means it doesn't need to lead at all, it comes from behind. Four means it's late. Two means it needs to lead right around the second call, and one needs it leads to lead wire to wire. Then you come up with the speed rating, which we'll discuss. Then you have the long shot potential of that horse. It's a very important readout. Long shot potential is a horse that overcomes the pace against which it ran, even if it was a slower pace. The start and pace number is a primary corollary. Factor X was proven by statistics over the last several years to be a prime corollary. The Greek E sign, the epsilon sign, is entropy. Total speed is what TS stands for. Not true speed, not the final time, but total speed based on a formula which I hope doesn't get out. And TP means total pace potential, which is also a formula derived from chaos math. Then you have a line score based on those factors, low being best, and their rank against each other. Now we have something brand new, which is very dynamic, as attested to by those who are winning with it. Fractals. What are fractals? They are minute portions of, let's say, fractions. Undiscernible by the naked eye, undiscernible by linear math. Fractals, not fractions, fractals. Designate small, minute differentials within the running of a fraction itself. Fractal E designates the horse that is most likely to take the lead, run early. Fractal L is the horse where it's weighted toward his late energy, and fractal N is with normal deceleration. When all three of these light up on your computer, you have pretty much of a horse that you don't want to overlook. Supplementary corollaries on the next page. Page U, are those fractional readouts, fraction 1, 2, and 3, and second call, and the energy derivative therefrom. And then you have a lot of things that are duplicated. The early pace rating, the late pace rating, the composite pace rating, second fraction, turn time, hidden energy, factor W, and factor X. Then you have some duplications which go on that final screen. Now you have vital factors, which in case you're interested in running times, shows you the horse's second call velocity. This being a route, the best was 111 and 1, the least was 112 and 4. Then you move over to the second call beaten lengths. Now this, according to many, many handicappers, is very important, especially for getting a model of what will win currently. First horse was beaten 3.3 lengths, the second 7 lengths at the second call, and the CCC 1.3 lengths, and DDD was wire-to-wire horse, so it was not beaten at all. Then you have the third fraction velocity with DDD running a 37.1, CCC a 37.2, and the very late horse, BBB, 36.4 and 36.3 for AAA. What you do is when you look at these readouts and you find three out of five or six that agree, what it does is to sustain your psychological protocol so that you will have the courage to make a sufficient wager. Now let's face it, there are a lot of people who can pick winners. But how much do they bet on those winners? How many side bets do they make that destroy whatever profit they would have got had they just picked their winner? There's a great deal of abulia, of indecision in handicappers. They say, oh, I had that horse. I had that horse. They've got all sorts of things to justify their bet that they don't make. Corollary is the factor that will give you the confidence to make the proper decision in wagering. Now I have taken under my wing a few personal handicappers who live close enough that I can do that. One of them is Paul Charles Jr. Now, Paul had been a member of the methodology for some time. He was cyclic. He was winning. He was doing fairly well. He was able to take his wife out for a few dinners, buy a few luxuries. He was relatively consistent, but he wasn't making that, those, getting those long shots that made him the big money that he dreamed of. So I said, Paul, I'll take you under my wing and I'll give you some personal help. Personal help is not teaching people how to handicap. It's teaching them how to use what they already have in a constructive way. I didn't teach him how to handicap. He already knew how to handicap. What he didn't know was how to correlate his handicapping ability with his betting. He was betting the wrong two horses on frequent occasions. After 6 weeks of working with him and with his using Pace Launcher, he produced this record, which is in your ancillary manual. I'll let you read it for yourself, but his profit on each dollar bet was $1.02. In other words, he got back $2.02 for each dollar bet. Had he bet $10 a race, which surprisingly enough is the limit of some people, I wouldn't have believed it, but it is, he would have made $240 in this 8-day period. Had he bet $20 a race, he'd have made $481.60. Now at $10 a race, he would have made $30 a day. Can't make a living, can't call that a living, $30 a day, but it's a heck of a lot better than losing. Now, if he bet $20 a race, he'd have made $60 a day. If he bet $50 a race, he'd have made $150 a day. So please, proportion your needs to what you can get. If $30 a day will help you, then you only need to bet the $20. If only need to bet $10, as a matter of fact. If $60 a day will help you, you need to bet $20 a race. This is based on an average of 5 races a day. The second person that I've taken under my wing is Guy Wadsworth, my computer programmer. Now, Guy did some computer programming from an expert from yesterday who wrote a couple of books, and he was pretty well tuned into mainstream concepts. He never had really gone out and bet races, and he was a little bit frightened of doing so. So we got him a very small bank, $100, and he bet in accordance with Pace Launcher's bottom line betting line, and he now makes 50% a day on his investments. That means when he bets $100 a day, he gets back a profit of $50. I'm very proud of these two people. There's no reason in this world why these two persons, just because I was able to take them under my wing, should be doing any better than you or anyone else. 3,000 miles away in Pennsylvania, we have Mel Schroeder, who without any personal supervision was written up and verified to have a 30%, $1.30 for every dollar invested ROI. So it doesn't require hands-on treatment. It merely means you have to accept the realities of racing today. And the realities of racing today are not contained in yesterday's methods, yesterday's rules. You have to do as Buddy Alvarado against the tide. How do we start? The biggest question we've had since the very beginning was how to pick a pace line. How to weed out non-contenders from contenders. Ironic enough, if people who aspire to make a living or augment their living through horse racing can't seem to grasp the most basic tenet of all, finding the proper contenders and the most predictable pace line. Well, I think we've solved that now. I know we've solved it for those who will accept it, but not everybody will accept it. Let's take a look at some statistics. We compiled them in 1975, and there's a place in Las Vegas, a very reputable research organization called Sportstat. I think I'm told, at least, that the reason for their doing this research is to prove me wrong, that the Daily Racing Form Speed Rating Plus variant was inadequate and was not nearly as good as speed ratings produced by Beyer, Ragusan, Henry Cook, and you name them. Lo and behold, to their amazement, they found out that the use of the best of the last three races, Speed Rating Plus variant, produced only a 0.04 loss. This is on page 96, if you're interested. 96 in your main manual. Best figure, the last three starts at Hollywood Park, which is a track that doesn't require too much use of the variant, so they use that as a control track, minus 0.04 ROI, winning. Now this is betting the best of the last three indiscriminately, without concern for surface, distance, or anything else, just the best of the last three, period, adding up the speed rating and variant. Now let's take a look at the Beyer speed ratings with a comparable best of last three. At Hollywood Park, minus 10%. At other tracks, minus 17%. Very interesting, because Beyer, in his original book, said that he developed his figures to improve upon the somewhat skeptical, he was, Daily Racing Form speed rating and variant. Bloodstock is even less profitable than Beyer. Bloodstock's produce a minus 18% at Hollywood Park and a minus 16% the rest of the country. Henry Cook, minus 10, minus 13. And then we go to Ragusan. Mr. Ragusan has just recently written a book called The Odds Must Be Crazy, based on the title of another book called The Gods Must Be Crazy. Mr. Ragusan's figures, which you'll find in here, also do not produce as good a result as the Daily Racing Form speed rating and variant, even though he charges $35 a day and states in one full chapter of his book that the reason for the Ragusan sheets was to develop a number that was superior to that from the Racing Form speed rating and variant. Mr. Ragusan almost duplicates the Daily Racing Form in win percent, but he does not come anywhere near it in average odds. The Racing Form's average odds are considerably superior to Beyer or Ragusan or any of these other ratings. So we have a basis there, a fact. And here's a nice thing about that fact. You walk up to any horse player, you walk up to any expert, and you tell them that, and they'll say you're wrong, that the Racing Form is based on a stupid formula and all that sort of thing. Why? Because most of them are selling their own ratings. But that is the myth that has been perpetrated on the handicapping public, goodness knows how many years, that there's got to be something better than the Daily Racing speed rating and variant. And lo and behold, our research and the research of a very reliable organization, Sportsat, says no, the Racing Form daily speed rating and variant is far superior. Now the reason we can point to Sportstat as being very reliable, viable, and accurate is that Mr. Ragusan, in his new book, points with pride, bragging about the accuracy of Sportstat and the fact that they showed that by using his computer, he personally, going to Las Vegas for 8 weeks, return on investment of 14%. I mentioned Mel Schroeder back in Pennsylvania, 30% profit. Twice what Mr. Ragusan does. Guy Wadsworth, 50%, over three times. And Charles, what an amazing guy this is, four times as much. All because they accepted certain facts of life about racing which are not accepted by the mainstream, because they fully agreed with Buddy Alvarado's statement that whatever the mainstream says to do, do the opposite. These people are winning money. Now, how have we revised the daily racing form, speed rating, and variant to make it even more profitable? You have in your manual this page which says SSR, Sarton speed rating. We have determined that the average variant of a trip by day is somewhere between 16 and 18, so for 16, 17, and 18, we call it a zero variant. I know a lot of people, and I'll address this before we go on so that you won't have this to worry about. A lot of people say, oh no, in my track, the average daily variant is 8, or it's 19, or it's 12, or it's this and that. Third grade mathematics will show you that any number between 10 and 20 used as an average variant will produce the same ranking order for horses. So 16, 17, 18 is not just arbitrary. It works as well as 12, 13, 14, or any other series of numbers between 10 and 20. So don't let be hung up on whether your variant, your track is 16, 17, 18. We give no adjustment upward or downward for 16, 17, and 18. Then we give a half, 1/2 point of credit for everything over 18, and 1/2 point of descending credit for everything under 60. So that's all explained here. The numbers are very clearly there if you don't sense it immediately in your head, both a vertical and a horizontal chart. If you use that, what I do is I mark my racing form. Take what I've done on Vic Palermo's race. It starts on page 75 of your workbook, of your main workbook. All I do is write in the net Sarton speed rating based on the best of the last three races for each horse. Two of them, the first one gets nothing because it is nowhere near in the 70s. The second one gets a 75.5 and so on. Do this and you'll immediately see who the contenders are. Give them that before you do anything else. Now, if you're downloading, be sure you print out your download sheets and do the same thing. All too many people who download, and this is a terrible problem, they will just arbitrarily pick some line or a line with an asterisk and put that horse in without thinking. And that makes me go back to what I said at the beginning of this tape. Sometimes I really wonder if people really, truly want to win, or do they just want to play the horses. Having determined the best of the last three, and I'll throw in one word, comparable. Too many people get hung up on the word comparable. The best of the last three comparable races. All you have to do to find out what's comparable is just a little bit of research yourself. Things that are comparable is comparable distance, comparable surface. That's very important. Don't use turf and dirt ratings interchangeably unless you have a really very good reason. And only go back four races when one of the first three is at a different or non-comparable distance or surface. Now you're going to ask yourself, is 5.5 furlongs comparable to 6, 6.5, and 7? Is 6 comparable to 7.5? And things like that. Sprints are sprints, routes are routes. They're comparable, but determine whether 5.5 is comparable to 6.5 at your track. All you need do is do some research and see how well horses coming from 5, 5.5 furlong lines do when they stretch out. Then you'll know yourself at your particular tracks whether or not 5.5 is comparable. I'm just using that as an example. Finding what's comparable is very, very simple if research. If you do accurate research, nobody can tell you any more than you can tell yourself. It's very difficult for me to sit here in California and tell somebody in Pennsylvania.